evening. Welcome to the regularly scheduled May 3rd meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We had one agenda item, and that was discussion of our superintendent's evaluation. No action was taken. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
We do? Okay. Then we'll be looking to adopt the minutes of April 19th.
I would move to adopt the minutes of April 19th.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Followed by an adoption of the minutes of April 26th.
I'll move the adoption of those minutes.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, so we have five ayes and abstentions by Mr. Unger and Mr. Millar. Presentations. We have student recognition. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, board, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to recognize some exceptional accomplishments in our district recently, and as you can see from the room that there are different beautifully decorated colors and smiling faces, and that's because our students are doing really well. And tonight we selected a few groups that we would like to acknowledge for their accomplishments this year. In particular, if you would give me a little bit of time here, I'd like to introduce our teachers who are representing certain specific groups of students, and they're going to then come to the podium and talk about their program for a little bit and what their students have done to warrant these awards and these honors that they've gotten. So I think what I'd like to do is start with our Skills USA program, and I'd like to introduce from Morro Bay High School Liz Moore, Meredith Salio, and Donald Rapucci. And they're going to talk about their Skills USA winner.
It's an amazing organization for our students, and I'd like to introduce Tori White to actually do the talking.
Hi, I'm Victoria White, and it's been such an honor to have such support coming from the school district and from Morro Bay High School. For those of you who haven't heard, I won the pin design segment of Skills USA. And what that is I'm given a theme, and I take that theme and I create a design. And the design that I create is meant to be able to be scaled up to a 7x7 and a 1-inch by 1-inch pin without any loss of the design, like quality. And it was such an honor to be able to have such support coming from home and being able to come back a second year and win the gold medal. So thank you so much.
And maintaining the theme of Skills USA in our district, I'd like to introduce our San Luis Obispo High School phenomenal instructor, Mr. Jeff Lemquil. And I don't know if Mr. Fay is with us tonight. So Mr. Lemquil, could you please introduce your students?
A lot of hardware.
Yeah. Thanks very much for having us tonight. The FFA people here probably aren't going to like this, but I always say Skills USA is to technology areas as FFA is to agriculture. So everybody knows FFA. So first, come on up. This is Ben Hurley. Ben is my student who's done automotive service technology. He was fortunate to be first in the state last year and took fifth place at the nation as at the Nationals in Louisville last year as a junior, which is unheard of, and won the state again this year. And we're going to be taking him back to Louisville in June to hopefully win the national title. You want to say something to him?
Yeah. It's been a real honor being able to compete a second year this year. And last year I got the same support from all of you guys. It really means a lot to have everybody at home be cheering for me when I'm flying all the way to Kentucky and stuff. So, yeah, it's been really great, and I'm really looking forward to being able to do my best this year. I'm sustaining a back injury, but with all the support from you guys, I'm sure that we can do it.
All right. So. Awesome. Ben will compete for 8 hours straight on Thursday, June 23rd. He'll go through 13 stations that are put on by all the major automotive manufacturers, both foreign and domestic, put on by their national trainers with new cars. So it's a pretty exciting contest. So next up is Johnny Righetti. He is a student of Mr. Faye's. Mr. Faye can't be here tonight. Johnny is in got a gold medal this year in the combo welding category, and he'll tell you just a little bit about it, if that's okay.
Good evening, board. Real quick, I'd like to thank all you guys and all of our advisors for giving us absolutely every chance to succeed, and I'm hoping to represent San Luis very well at Nationals. A little bit about the competition. We have five different welding projects and one cutting project where we try and build each set of plans, each project to the highest degree of accuracy and precision that we can, whether it's placing welds in the right place or cutting the right piece off and putting it back together. Thank you.
Sounds simple. It isn't. They have to be able to read weld symbols and read prints and then put the welds when they need to do and where they need to be and then weld really amazing, and then they get judged. It's quite a contest. Next up is Scott Manning. He is Jan Fetcho's student. She could not be here tonight. She was ill. His contest, I'm going to let you tell him about it because I don't even know what it is. Don't understand it.
Okay. Hi, board. My contest is technical computer apps, and basically what it is you go into the Windows operating system, you have to know how to function Word, Excel, different programs, and also you have to know how to work the operating system to install and software through terminal and things like that. This is my first year doing Skills USA, so it was really nice to get a victory right off the bat, and I'm really excited for Nationals. So, yeah.
Next is Mr. Faye's welding fabrication team, and we've got Wyatt Judge and Thomas Phelan and Jacob Grant, and Wyatt's going to tell you a little about their contest.
Hi, and good evening. I just want to say thank you to all of you guys, and thank you especially to our advisors for bringing us all this way and giving us this opportunity. And our competition is basically ahead of the competition. We will get a set of parameters for a project that we have to design using both AutoCAD and SolidWorks software on our own with the help of our advisors. So we take the parameters and design the project from the ground up, and then have to go to the contest site and in 6 hours take all the materials we are given and build it from scratch. And then we have to use every welding process and a cutting process on it that will all be graded upon quality and accuracy of us sticking to the plans that we created.
Terrific. I'd like to also introduce two more students of Jan Fetcho's, Brianna Chambers and Lauren Greenlee. Their competition is interactive application and game development. Did I do that right? Okay, why don't you come on?
Hi. So, what interactive game and app development is. We developed a video game that can be played on eventually on any computer. We're going to eventually probably market it, or that's our goal for it.
Basically, what we had to do was come up with the idea for the game and get like some parts of it working. And our other teammate, who couldn't be here, did the programming for it, and Brianna and I did concept and in-game art.
Thanks, John. Thanks again for your support of all of our Skills USA competitors. This represents a medalist, but there were quite a large group of others that went down to the state contest that aren't going on to the Nationals necessarily. Thanks again.
So now we're going to switch to Future Farmers of America, the FFA program, and I'd like to introduce from Morro Bay High School, Mrs. Linda Todd, and her winner from Morro Bay.
Good evening. Before I turn it over to my student. I won it. Last year I was here with you with a state winner in a proficiency, Ag Mechanics Repair and Maintenance Placement with Tyler Metter. And I just want to let you know that he went on to be second place. He was a national finalist and ended up being second place in the nation last October at the National FFA Convention in Louisville. So he did very well. And then I'm just going to introduce my student, Autumn Boyd, to tell you what's going on.
Good evening. I'm Autumn Boyd, and I'm currently serving as our chapter FFA reporter. I was also named the Star Sectional Reporter for the San Luis Obispo section this year, and further received a gold ranking as reporter in our state. Our advisor, Ms. Todd, received a gold advisor ranking for our state, and Annette Benelli, our ASB secretary, received a gold support for staff ranking. Hannah Shear had the honor of being one of the five selected to take off one of our state secretary's FFA jacket at a ceremony at our state conference. For our veterinary science team, we've succeeded in the last competitions. Last Sunday, Katrina Symes placed in our general knowledge test first and fourth place in the breed identification, while Jordan Haddad placed first in breed identification and fourth in general knowledge. Additionally, Katrina was also third high individual, and Jordan placed fourth in high individual. We have had a successful year and won our chapter, and we cannot wait for what the next year brings us. Thank you so much for the support from my district.
And next up, I'd like to introduce Mrs. Anna Bates, representing FFA from San Luis Obispo High School. Now, before she begins to speak, come on up, Anna. I just want to share just a personal experience. I was invited to attend a breakfast or a morning sort of celebration, that's what I was told, at the Fresno Convention Center at the FFA State Leadership Conference last week. So I traveled, I went, and I had absolutely no idea what I was walking into. 6,000 students from across the state, all wearing the blue jackets. And as a former middle school principal, when you see 6,000 students, you get very nervous, just from a safety standpoint. But I do have to say, what I was left with, beyond the incredible amount of talent in the room that you'll see here, that you are seeing tonight, what I was left with was how amazing the students were. 6,000 high school students, all acting professionally, all acting with care and respect for one another. It was a display of leadership, and I'm very impressed. So, Mrs. Bates.
Well, thank you, Dr. Prater. You seem to have left out the part about it being like a Beyonce concert, but I'll let you talk about that later. Thank you for having us here tonight. We have a lot of students to recognize in our group. We took 35 students to the State Leadership Conference this year, which is a lot, but one of the major reasons was that the state president this year, Joel Lewis, was from our very own chapter. And so what he got to see, and also Mr. O'Connor, was an alumnus of our school lead the entire thing, which was incredible. So if you did not see her retiring address, I shared it with our staff, and it was in Mr. O'Connor's newsletter. You should really take the 18 minutes and listen to it and realize that it's just an incredible thing. And so in addition to the conference, we have several kids back here that are worthy of recognition. So I'd first like to call up Taylor Young. Come on up here. We had two students qualify for the State Creed Speaking Contest, which is a freshman-only contest. And for the almost 15 years I've been here, it's been kind of the bucket list thing for our chapter to be successful in this contest. And we had two students from our own school make the final six. And to put that into perspective for you, there are 29,000 freshmen in agriculture education classrooms in the state of California. And all of them are exposed to the Creed contest. And so Taylor ended up placing third in the entire state. And Lily Steele, who is not here right now because she's on varsity swimming and trying to be successful there, actually became the state champion. And so
Taylor, I'd like you to say hi.
Hi.
And we're just super proud of their accomplishments, and it's she was also on our debate team, too, so I'd like to give her a huge round of applause. In addition, our novice parliamentary procedure team, come on. I'm very fortunate to work with very talented students, and I love doing this, and I know some of you have seen our other teams. This year we have the National Advanced winning team, and we're carrying on the tradition. For now the fourth time, our novice kids will be headed off to, where are we going now? Indianapolis, for the national competition as well. And so I'm going to actually have them introduce themselves so that they can step up to the microphone.
I'm Shale Piorke.
I'm Jadea Huber.
Hi, my name's Lily Svetich.
I'm Taylor Young.
And I'm Sophie Mano.
And we're actually missing Lily Steele, Sydney Anselmo, and Ariana King. There are eight of them, and they're amazing young women, and all of them are freshmen except for Sophie. And so they will be competing, like I said, in October in Indianapolis. And our advanced team also got fourth in the entire state, and they're all very young, so that was an incredible feat for them as well. So anyways, this is our novice parliamentary procedure debate team. I'm going to hand the microphone over to these young individuals who can explain their accomplishments.
Hi, my name is Minori Jagia, and I competed in the Impromptu Public Speaking Contest. So this is a contest that is available to all sophomores in FFA, and it's basically a two-minute impromptu public speaking contest. So you have a minute to think about the topic that relates to either agriculture or leadership, and then you give a 30-second to two-minute speech. And I placed third in California.
Hi, my name is Clea Cerrone, and I'm a junior this year. I competed in the Extemporaneous Public Speaking Contest, which what it entails is I pick three topics out of a bag. I get to choose one of them. I have 30 minutes to prepare a 4 to 6 minute speech in front of judges, and then I receive 5 questions afterwards. This is my first year, however, it's open to all grade levels in California, and I placed third in the state. Along with this, our chapter filled out our national chapter application, which means that we try to emphasize everything that we do in our community, our classroom, how we relate to working with the students, with their parents, to ensure that their agricultural education experience is going to serve them through career pathways and furthermore. And we placed first in the state for our chapter, and we will be competing and hopefully filling out more applications to see if we can qualify for nationals and hopefully place first. We moved on to nationals last year, and this year we're hoping to take home the championship. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Amber Bierre, and I competed in participating in two different things at state conference. So primarily, I was competing in the job interview contest, which is just like it sounds, a mock job interview. And I had the opportunity to become a state champion in that. And so I will be going back to Indianapolis in October, along with the novice parliamentary procedure team, to compete there. And additionally, I was on the state nominating committee, which along with 11 other individuals from across our state, and we chose the top 12 individuals that were running for state office, and that got slated for state office. So that was an incredibly rewarding experience that led me to really reflect on my past 4 years in the FFA, especially because this was my last state conference. So that was an incredible opportunity, and our very own Luke O'Leary was slated as the state FFA treasurer. So he got the opportunity to really showcase his talents throughout the nominating committee process, and I saw that in a lot of other individuals across the state as well. So thank you again for all of your support.
Hello, everybody. My name is Luke O'Leary. I'm a senior at San Luis Obispo High School, and I competed in the Prepared Public Speaking Competition at a state conference. And what this competition consists of is you write a 6 to 8 minute speech on an agricultural issue. So mine was on food insecurity and global hunger. And then you present this speech in front of a panel of judges and then answer 5 minutes of questions at the end. And so you have to turn in a manuscript before, so it's a lot about having correct citing of your sources and then being able to present well and then back up everything you said in the questions. And so I was the third in our state for the past 3 years, actually. Sophomore, junior, senior, I've been third. But it was an exciting competition, and I was really grateful for that placing. Also, we had our STAR advisor, our advisor, Mrs. Evans, who's not here tonight. She was in the STAR Advisor competition and was named the STAR Advisor in the state of California. And how that works is our chapter completed an application. Amber Beer actually was fully ahead of that application process. And then when we got to state conference, I interviewed on Mrs. Evans' behalf. So there's a student interviewing on every advisor's behalf. And in their interview, they just ask about how the advisor has worked to bring agricultural education to the forefront of our schools and get students excited about agricultural education and everything about the advisor. So I was really grateful to be able to interview on her behalf as she's impacted me a lot throughout the high school. So to see her get that State STAR Advisor Award is really an accomplishment, especially because last year, Mrs. Bates, our other advisor, was a State STAR Advisor. So to see 2 years back-to-back have a San Luis Obispo advisor be STAR Advisors, really a testament to our program here. So thank you all for your support.
And we still have more to go. I would like to introduce Lisa Washmuth from San Luis Obispo High School, and she'll acknowledge the FHA Hero Program.
Good evening, Board, and thank you for having us. First thing I want to let you know is that FHA Hero is part of a national organization, FCCLA. FCCLA stands for Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America. California has been voting on this for the last 17 years. It finally passed. We are no longer FHA Hero. We are FCCLA. So that was a huge accomplishment. And we don't have to say, no, we're not future homemakers of America, because I don't teach that. I took these students to our state leadership conference, as you guys know. And we did very well. I took five competitors, and we brought home three different places. And I'm going to let them tell you what they had to do to get there.
All right. So I'm Emily Streeter, and I competed in apparel construction, and I received first place in that. And basically, for the competition, you are given a pattern, and you can practice before. The pattern this time was a romper. And you are given, at the actual competition, 2 hours to complete that romper. Oh. And I will be going to nationals.
Hi, I'm Emma Anderson, and I competed in the child development event where I have to prepare a lesson plan for 3 to 4 year olds and then perform it for a group of judges, and I got first in the state.
Right.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sherry Donahue, and Liliana and I competed in fashion design, which is where you got a theme, and this year it was boho chic, and you had to design a line of 4 outfits that went with the theme. You had to get fabric swatches, notion swatches. You had to do an entire cost breakdown of how much it would, how much money it would take to make all these outfits, and how much retail and target retailers, and there's a lot of behind the scenes. There's a giant portfolio you had to make, something like a real fashion designer would have to do to pitch a line. And I got third in the state of California. So, yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Brittany Steinbrunner. I did not compete, but I was a voting delegate, so I voted to change the name to FCCLA. And then I'm also a Region 5 historian. So I get to make a scrapbook for the region for the year and just bring everything together for what happened that year. And then also for our region meetings, I get to preside over them. So I get to go up on stage and lead everyone in those meetings.
And before I bring up our final group, I'd like to take a quick moment. As you can see, these are reflections of our efforts to improve career technical education, CTE, in San Luis Coastal. And I want you to know, and I'd like to recognize a former ROP Teacher of the Year of our own from Morro Bay High School, and that's Mrs. Liz Moore. And if I could have her come up for a moment. And the reason I just want to acknowledge her for a moment is she agreed to step in as a coordinator for us. And I couldn't ask for anyone better. She has really taken the lead in working with the County Office of Education, Cuesta College, and our local business partners. And what this means to us, of course, is now we have someone who really knows what it is and has the ability and the experience to bring staff together, align resources. We have the San Luis Obispo, it's a slope grant.
Yeah.
I call it a slope grant. Yeah. But
Partners in Education.
Partners in Education grant. And it's a sizable grant that funds specifically meant to help enhance and build your CTE pathways for our students. And so as you know, the state of California and really across the nation, the new movement, if you will, is to ensure that students leave with skills, both career and college-ready skills. And so CTE, now more than ever, is critical at both of our comprehensive high schools. And I'm just so proud of your effort and your willingness, Liz, to step up and help lead this fantastic group. So thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate that I appreciate that the board is looking at CTE and you have it in your focus area. You know that I'm super excited to do this, and I've met a lot of passionate people in the last couple months about CTE. So thank you very much, and we have a lot of successful students that are becoming career and college ready.
And then last but certainly not least, I want to take a moment to acknowledge, we'll introduce the principal at San Luis Obispo High School, Mr. Leslie O'Connor. And the reason I'd like to introduce him tonight is because he not only, well, as you know, is the principal of a comprehensive high school, but he decided that he was going to coach the girls' varsity soccer team this year. And not only did he coach this fantastic group of student athletes, but he nearly took them all the way to the very top in the state. So I'd like to give him kudos for taking on that challenge, and I'm going to let him talk about his amazing team.
Well, thank you. I'm not too sure how well I took on the responsibility, but anyway. By the way, I wanted to acknowledge Anna Bates. I'd love to be able to just clap my hands and kids get up like that. That's pretty amazing. I really like that. I'm honored to be here. I took on the responsibility this season to coach the girls' varsity soccer team. Board, thank you for your support. Dr. Prater, thank you for your support in that endeavor. We were very blessed to have a very young, talented group of young ladies who really decided to buy into a philosophy based on hard work. Kind of novel idea, right? And they really, really excelled. And they just built upon success from game to game. We have seven of them joining us here this evening. There was 21 kids altogether on the team or in the program. Needless to say, we only had two returning senior players from last year's team. We actually graduated as a school like 13 players last year, so we had two players returning who were seniors. In total, we ended up with four girls on the varsity team who were seniors, two of which came back from the previous years, and we had one foreign exchange student who's here with us this evening, and another young lady who hadn't played goalkeeper for a couple of seasons, and she was our backup goalkeeper. We had seven freshmen out of that group of 21. And we ended up with a record for the season as 27 wins, 2 losses, and 1 tie. The 1 tie was because the lights weren't working, so they hold that against me. We could have had maybe 28 wins. But the two teams that we lost to were two of the best teams, not only in the state of California, but also in the nation. And truly, they were very, very talented and very gifted teams. Our final game was in the SoCal Regional Final against South Hills from West Covina. It was 2-1. They scored the winning goal with about 8 minutes left in the game. It was back and forth. They finished the season as one of the top five rated teams in the nation. I've coached before, and in about 20 years, I was probably one of the most talented teams. But our team was smart, they were dedicated, they were hardworking, and the future is very, very bright. So I just wanted to take a moment to introduce the girls that are joining us this evening, and they can come up. We have Elena Kramer, who's a sophomore. Come on up, Elena. Joella Holmes is a freshman, so come on up, Joella. Sarah Atala, who's a sophomore. Christina Smelser, who's a junior. Sierra Nunes, who's a senior, one of our senior captains. Grace Park, who's a junior. Foreign exchange student from Germany, who's also a senior, Ali Kulik. And senior captain Grace Huerta. Not only are they excellent student athletes, they're also great role models, and many of these soccer players also play multiple sports. You're looking at three girls right here who are on the track team right behind me, another one on the track team over here, and they play multiple sports, and they're huge contributors to our sports program and our student athlete program on campus. So again, thank you for all your support. We really appreciate it.
Well, that was wonderful. And congratulations to all of you. And I think I know I speak for the entire board when I say how proud we are for your successes, and we know how hard you work to get where you are. So just enjoy this. It's wonderful, wonderful for everyone. And we thank the advisors, the staff advisors, who I'm sure gave countless hours to support these students in their goals and help them to recognize these achievements. So thank you very much. Oh, we just sort of expected an exodus. So the it's okay to leave.
Thank
now.
You, everyone.
Now, we have two speakers who have requested to address the board, and they both specifically want to speak to career technical education related issues. So if I could ask Max to bear with me, I'm going to bring public comment before student representative comment to the board. Okay, thank you very much.
And the first speaker is Mr. John Reeves.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. My name is John Reeves. My wife and I own an auto shop on Tank Farm Road, Reeves Auto Repair. Been in business for almost 5 years. I'm a former student at Cuesta College. I've been an automotive technician for just over 20 years. I've employed several slow high graduates, all in auto tech, obviously. I currently employ Melissa Perosi, a 2011 slow high graduate and Skills USA competitor, and Brandon Manos, a 2011 Morro Bay graduate, auto tech program. Missy's been with us, and she started an ROP about 6 years ago at a station that I managed. She stayed with us and has become a tremendous asset to our business and part of our family over the years. Brandon got a later start, but he continues to impress us all with his mechanical ability. I'd like to take this opportunity to share with you my recent experience at the CTE Advisory Committee meeting. I got the opportunity to tour an absolutely amazing facility. The auto shop was clean, organized, well-kept, stocked with the latest, greatest automotive diagnostic tools that we need in today's advanced engine performance-based automotive field. I can't tell you, I mean, they have everything you'd ever need. And they have the newest cars. They have donated cars from Ford and Chevrolet. Jeff has such an amazing program out there. I wish I had these resources. Anyway, you know, the welding shop also and fab shop blew my mind. The fact that these kids have an opportunity to learn this skill set so early in life and develop that and grow that as they progress into the field is just dumbfounding. I'm so excited to, you know, even be able to tell you guys this. Wood shop is also very impressive. The latest safety equipment to keep them safe, and it teaches them the basics and the advanced fundamentals to move into the construction field. You know, I went to a private Catholic school. There was plenty of opportunities to advance in sciences, arts, education, and sports, but there was none of this. I graduated with a low GPA because, for me, it's always been about cars. I didn't have an outlet like this to develop, and I'm not complaining or anything, but I moved on. Odd jobs, low GPA meant no college. You know, I did community college kind of aimlessly. Heard about Cuesta, signed up. The first time in my life, I was getting straight A's in college, and I loved it. Couldn't wait to go. And it truly helped advance my career, shape my life. You know, and that's awesome. So it's so important to keep and expand vocational training in our local community. These kids need direction at such a pivotal time in their life. And with teachers like Lemkuhl, Fay, Brewington, you know, giving them this direction and caring and teaching this tremendously valuable knowledge, they'll have it. They'll be able to move forward with confidence and a sense of pride and a skill they can continue to develop in the career world. And I'm hiring them personally. So thank you.
Thank you.
And our next speaker is Bill Wilson.
Hello, my name is Bill Wilson. I've lived in the community for 30 plus years. I have three of my children have attended San Luis High School and graduated and gone on to the university. And I've been very proud to be a part of the San Luis High School. Now, my background is I've been a woodworker, fifth generation cabinet maker and contractor, and I have an industrial arts degree. I taught out at Cuesta for 10 years in the woodworking and furniture design. I love shops. Now, I've had the ability, when I was reworking the shop out at Cuesta, I had the joy to go and visit many shops around the state to look what other programs were doing so I could learn from other facilities and then emulate them and grow our program. But what I have to say here, what concerns me the most, now I supported the bonds, I've supported this program, but this is the only shop probably in the state, I don't know for sure, but there were 1940 buildings. These are old buildings, they're outdated, they're inadequate. And I've been to many shops. And so it really concerns me that we're planning to put a Band-Aid on these facilities. Now today, you know, one of the greatest joys is teaching and sharing and working with kids and see the possibilities and see how unique each child is. And, you know, there's so many lessons that are taught in a shop. You know, dealing with problems, there's always something going wrong. It's always a creative. It's one of the few places you're working in three dimensions. Also, you know, I did graduate from a community college, and I had the joy of working with teachers who had made their living in their trade. And I was able to learn that and provide for a family and have a business in town. So my concern is when we are voting and supporting the bond, it was always about upgrading the facilities. And so when I'm hearing that we're planning on, you know, doing retrofitting these buildings, you know, it's just not right. And these kids, as tonight, it was amazing to see all these kids, and it's amazing that they're coming out of these facilities. Now, it's great that we still have these programs. I have different friends that are working in around the state, and they're starting this pendulum swinging where they're understanding that vocational education is really important. And a lot of these schools have let their programs go, and they're having to build them from scratch again. And so what I would like just to say is, you know, where is our priority, you know, in our building? And if you know, seeing today all the students that are here, and I just can't help but say, you know, we should give the children and our students what they were promised and what we voted for, and that's new facilities. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. You know, I might suggest that you schedule an appointment with Mr. Palazzo, Anthony Palazzo, our Director of Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation, and I think perhaps he can explain to you what our vision is for the facilities that the Measure D bond will...
I have looked at some of the plans, and I've been in the facilities, and I've been in other facilities around the state, and I can tell you they're not 1940 buildings with low ceilings and narrow buildings. You know, that. I've been a teacher. I know what it's like to be trying to have a line of sight with all the students and having adequate space for them to work in.
Okay, well, I can't engage in dialogue with you.
The
Brown Act precludes that.
You what I,
but I just, my suggestion would be that you, if you're able, to schedule a meeting with Mr. Palazzo, and he, I think, can elaborate a little more on what's forthcoming through Measure D.
Thank you. I would very much like that.
Is there anyone who did not submit a formal request but who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, let me get my computer back on here. Mm-hmm, we are. And we'll move, going backwards, we'll go to student representatives to the board. We have someone sitting in Bella Stenvall's spot, but who is not Bella? It is Max Tiefert from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hello, all. My name is Max Tiefert. I am the vice president of the San Luis Obispo High School ASB, and I am currently filling in for the president, Bella Stenvall, who could not be here because she is at a tour of Harvard University right now, which is where she will be going in the fall. So it is the duty of the vice president to fill in wherever necessary for the president, and so that is what I am doing. So with that being said, one thing that didn't get mentioned as we recognized all these great SLO High School students is that we recently had a number of students head to the National Latin Exam. We had 57 students head over there, and we had 44 award recipients out of 57 students. That's pretty big. And so that's an awesome thing that we did. Another thing that's going on at our school right now is AP testing. It's not exactly an award that we received, but it's another area in which our school excels. We have all kinds of tests going on and a great number of students taking those tests. So those are going on this week and next week. Additionally, just some stuff coming from the ASB. We have our prom dance coming up in 3 weeks. It's rather late compared to other schools, but that is coming up. The theme is A Rendezvous Under the Blossoms. It's going to be like a Japanese pagoda kind of theme. Next, you guys likely heard a lot about the Mental Health Awareness Week that President Bella Stenvall organized, and it was a huge success. Teachers were having long, long discussions about mental health. I recall my second period teacher said, you know what, this is more important than the curriculum that I wanted to teach you guys today. Let's talk about mental health. And he gave up a whole period and talked to us and worked out our problems. And there were kids raising their hands and confessing things that I would be scared to confess. You know, there were people really, really opening up as a result of this week. Additionally, we spread awareness of suicide prevention. Not only did we give students contacts to suicide prevention hotlines, but we also just got the word out there that, you know, you are not alone, and it's not, you know, you have other options rather than to end your life. And so that was a huge thing, just spreading the awareness of that. And one cool thing is we got coverage of this whole event in the New Times SLO. We had a full article all about it, so that looks good for our school and for our district, and that's always a good thing. Next up, the ASB is currently organizing a Staff Appreciation Week, and I'd like to mention that it's not just our school staff we'd like to appreciate, it's all staff who contribute to our school as a whole, which would be you guys as well. So we appreciate you all. And part of that is that every student in ASB is assigned 4 secret buddy teachers, which they have to give gifts for throughout the week, you know, cookies and flowers and sweet treats and things like that. So we're just showing our teachers and all staff members on campus that they're appreciated and that the work they do on campus has a huge impact. And then we have a barbecue for that going on this Friday, so we're going to be grilling up some hamburgers for our teachers and have a little bit of a raffle. The next thing is that elections are currently going on for ASB. So next year's ASB class is starting to assemble. We already have the new executive council chosen. So we have the person who is going to be sitting in Bella's seat here next year chosen, along with the other 3 members of the executive council. And we are currently deciding class officers who put on things like dances and homecoming activities for each respective class. And then after that, we will be running commissioner applications, which are all the other students in ASB who do all the important specific functions. So, yeah, that's exciting. By the end of this month, we're going to have next year's ASB totally decided, and they're going to start preparing for next year, and that's big. And then the last thing I have is that our ASB is organizing a blood drive next Friday as a community service initiative, and so that's coming up right around the corner. And that's about it for our ASB. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very well done. You are welcome to stay and participate in the meeting if you so choose, or the board is aware that you have other obligations and schoolwork and things, and so you may feel free to leave with our thanks. Okay, when I moved public comment, we had to backtrack to student representatives to the board and correspondence. Correspondence was received from Tom Mano, encouraging us to continue to support career technical education, and from Colleen Martin regarding counseling. Any other correspondence that anyone would like to note? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to the superintendent's updates. Business and budget update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a few things happening this week. The school services kind of announces how tax receipts are coming in through the state, which, of course, with May revise coming up very soon, is going to affect the governor's budget. So unfortunately for the state, it looks like personal income taxes. Receipts have been down lower than estimates for the past 2 months in a row. So it'll be interesting to see what type of impact that has on the governor's budget, the May revise coming forward, which we should hear about in the next week, 2 weeks coming forward. It was also interesting to note kind of on a federal level that COLA is actually at 0% for next year for the 16-17 school year. It mainly, a lot of the focus in terms of the conversation about why that is basically lower inflation due to lower energy costs overall throughout the nation. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic. That, of course, the actual COLA, what they had predicted, was not very big anyway. So in terms of that having a dramatic effect on budgets, probably not going to have too much. Happy to note that the budget software came in today. So Julie Lang, who's been working tirelessly with her staff to kind of close up this year, kind of get prepared, because it goes right along with our LCAP discussion in terms of the budget, so that we can bring that forward. We were really concerned about whether we get that software in time to be able to have it ready for the next board meeting, and Julie just found out today that came in, so which is fantastic.
Okay. Thank you. Ed Services, or were there any questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Seeing none, Ed Services update. Mr. Robinette.
Well, I know that none of our students or staff are counting, but I just want to make sure the board's aware there are 26 days left in the school year. Well, I know no one's counting, but that means 85.5% of the school year is now finished, and which means that this time of year there are many open houses and award ceremonies and auction fundraisers and performances and senior showcases and baccalaureates and parties, and of course, just want to make sure the board is all aware that you need to get your caps and gowns pressed because you will be called into service on the 9th and 10th of June. So make sure you're marking your calendars for our commencement ceremonies. The only thing I want to mention amidst all those celebrations, there was one that I think was kind of notable. They're all notable, but last week, Pacheco Elementary School celebrated its 20th year anniversary, not as a school, but as a dual immersion program at a school. Pacheco, of course, was an existing school, but 20 years ago started with one kindergarten class, a dual immersion program. I remember it well because one of the adjunct duties that all of us site administrators had, we had to wear other hats in those days. And so I was a part-time EL coordinator while also being an assistant principal at Slo High School. And it's just amazing to think that that's 20 years ago. Those students that graduated from that program, that first class, are now 25 years old. And their children will probably start entering the program before long. Jim Miller, former principal that started the program, was at the award ceremony. I was not able to go. I was at another award ceremony. But I think it's just notable that that program has been going strong and since day one has had a waiting list of people eager to get into it. So a lot happening this time of year, but a lot happening tonight with our LCAP, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Moore?
I just want to make a comment that this board took action 20 years ago, it's hard to believe, to designate Pacheco as a special school, which enabled our district to, is get around the right term? Evade the really outrageous, requirements of the UNS initiative. I just was really proud of the district for taking that step. We've come a long way culturally, socially in this state, and I think it's been a real true gift. I hope to see Pacheco have 20 more years, particularly helping EL students become ex-EL students. So thanks for your service too, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to the Measure D update.
Yeah, so it's been a busy week, actually a week and a half now, in terms of bids coming in, our first bids for Measure D work and projects. Kudos to Anthony Palazzo, Kelly Lee, Karen Campbell-Bright in terms of getting those bids, setting it up, good structure, good system in place. You know, little things we'll be able to work together, tweak in terms of future bids, but overall pretty strong, I think, in terms of how they progressed in talking to contractors, talking to individuals that bid. They kind of shared the same thoughts with us. Excited that with these first bids that came out that we were kind of at our projected budgets and estimates, some a little bit lower, some just a tad bit higher, but right on par with what we had expected. And so that was good news in a lot of ways. So now we'll have to go through that construction process and make sure that they stay on bid as we proceed. So we do have our upcoming board study session on the 13th of May. So the focus there is going to be for Pratt Architects to be here and review the bridging documents in terms of where they're at progress-wise at both Morro Bay High School as well as San Luis Obispo High School. So they'll go through those plans with you. And then we will also kind of look at a budget overview. So kind of time to bring the board in and look at all those projects and budgets, show our cost estimates that have recently come in as well as some of these first projects that bid. So that'll be a good time, I think, to update the board kind of where we're at, big picture budget as well. I was actually able to go to C.L. Smith last week and see some of the new model furniture. I know some of the board members had stopped by, and so I think it's really important in terms of what we're doing, that we're trying things before we go spend a ton of taxpayer dollars to make sure that we're getting it right, that we're buying the right things that are really going to last, be useful to kids, and work well. So I'm excited about that, and they were very excited at C.L. Smith, both the kids and the teachers, with that progress. Lastly, just for the public to know, for the board to know, we do have our first kind of groundbreaking ceremonies coming. The tennis courts at Slo High, as well as we have our annex demolition, our temporary housing. So a lot of things happening. So that first groundbreaking is going to be on May 13th at San Luis Obispo High, and then we'll have the Measure D study session right afterwards. And then we'll also start the Morro Bay High School pool groundbreaking will be on the 20th. So these were kind of quick projects out front, but we have the annex student housing building coming soon for Slo High. We have the student services building, the J Wing, which is kind of the CTE hub at Morro Bay High School, and those classrooms coming very soon. So a lot of great things on the horizon for us to celebrate and really to thank our voters for Measure D and helping us bring our facilities to where they need to be.
Thank you. Any questions regarding Measure D? Okay. The next item, 8.01, is a resolution. Resolution number 13-15-16, Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yeah, thank you. I crashed a teacher appreciation breakfast here in this room yesterday for the teachers at San Luis Obispo High School, and the board should be aware that the NEA and the National Parent Teachers Association, the National PTA, have designated the first week in May as Teacher Appreciation Week, and so we have before you a proclamation, should anyone want to read it, in honor of Teacher Appreciation Week.
Do I have a board member that would be interested in reading this? If not, I'll... Mr. Questenberry.
I would read it if I could turn on the...
There we go. Okay, so this is a proclamation designating that May 2nd through the 6th 2016 as Teacher Appreciation Week. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express gratitude for the interest and concern that they have for our students, and whereas our teachers frequently and often selfishly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement toward helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations, and whereas the future of our state and the county depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 2nd through 6th, 2016, as Teacher Appreciation Week and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation. And I move adoption of this.
So we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Mr. Unger. And if there is no comment, a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you. And don't go anywhere, Mr. Robinette. The next item is the Local Control Accountability Plan. Oh. Well, you're to be joined by Mrs. Shields and Mrs. McGrath.
I will be, and Mrs. Frost. Tonight we'll be introducing the big ideas and a summary of the items that will appear. And I think we have a little presentation there, slide, Mrs. Holmes, if we can go to. That will tentatively appear, of course, pending board feedback, in our 2016-17 Local Control Accountability Plan. Oh, I have the ability to advance that. There we go. As the board is aware, as of 2014-15, this is how we adopt programmatic changes, allocate special services, and set goals that are aligned to very specific state priorities. Those priorities have to do with closing the achievement and access gaps, with making all students career and college ready, with engaging parents, and especially tending to the needs of our most vulnerable students. This plan is directly tied to a district's local control funding formula. We don't have a local control funding formula because we are a community-funded district. So we allocate money into this plan that would be representative of supplemental funds if we did. But in fact, we plan on spending about $5.8 million out of an $87 million budget, which is about 6.5% of our total expenditures, more than we would be required to spend were we an LCFF district on supplemental funds. So obviously, this only represents a portion of what we do, besides the daily business of teaching and learning, transporting, cleaning classrooms, administrating, supporting students. Because the LCAP is about specific goal attainment, it isn't the appropriate document for plans on some of those items, like maintaining facilities or staffing classrooms or negotiating working conditions for employees. It requires that we consult our stakeholders. So we do outreach to staff, parents, and students, and I shared a summary of that feedback at our last meeting, and it's all public on our district website. But this is not a stakeholder plan. It is an accountability plan, and the group that we are called to account for are our students, especially those who are called out in the LCFF law, low-income, English learners, foster homeless youth. Tonight's staff will present an overview that is focused on student achievement so that every student graduates career and college ready. It will show sustained support for the programs that lead to accountability. It is responsive to stakeholder feedback that supports student achievement, and it works within the resources we have. And let me speak a little more about that. When the board adopts the LCAP eventually, two meetings from now, by law, it also adopts the district budget. That's the way the law was designed. The LCAP represents a budget growth reflective of what we expect to receive in additional revenues. It does not suggest, nor should it ever suggest, living above our means. I wish the future horizon was a little less gray sometimes, but let's face it, the specter of a change in local funding due to Diablo Canyon's future is on everyone's mind. It's certainly in the press a lot. We know that personnel numbers will have to decrease over the next few years because of the added burden of statutory health benefits and retirement payments that the district is required to make that seem to be accelerating faster than our revenues increase. We have employee groups who are asking for cost of living raises and probably deserve those. And we have student growth that only hurts a basic aid district because more students don't help us any. So in this LCAP, we have cut staff at the district office while adding support services and socio-emotional health services, adding support in summer programs, student transition programs for middle and high schoolers, and teacher hourly pay elsewhere. We have not recommended adding permanent staff because to do so would mean to cut permanent staff elsewhere. We have kept six focus areas, accentuated some more this year, pulled back on others. And so I'd like to have our great writing team of Amy Shields, Kim McGrath, and Diane Frost present our overview for you.
Good evening. We'll begin with focus area number one. San Luis Coastal students will achieve substantial academic gains in mathematics. As the board is aware, our plans for the 16-17 school year are based on the work and progress our teachers and principals have made over the past 4 years, shifting the way students learn mathematics in San Luis Coastal. We are now in a place where we have a rigorous, standards-aligned K-12 mathematics program at all of our schools. As a result of this work, our mathtosis will return to the classroom next year, and there will be a significant reduction in the overall Focus 1 budget. What you will see in the next 3 years, in the next three action steps, is to continue the progress that has been made with the development of site leadership in mathematics. So as you can see, we've got three big areas there, the first one being to strengthen classroom instructional strategies. This will include professional development, on-site coaching and modeling, and it will be the vehicle to continue our work in developing teachers' expertise. We're adding both elementary and secondary, what we call math leads. These are teachers out in the classrooms who receive additional pay to take on those leadership roles both at their site and for our district. They'll be expanding our support to teachers to provide that continued help that our teachers need and want in mathematics. For elementary, we'll be planning voluntary after-school collaboration meetings to support teachers in year two or in year three of our adoption. These sessions will be facilitated by the grade level math leads. We'll also prep math materials up at the district office for both our new teachers as well as teachers assigned to combination classrooms. In secondary, our teachers will align curriculum maps and resources with our CPM curriculum. We will continue our connection with the Silicon Valley Math Initiative and stay current on best practices in mathematics and assessment through workshop and conference attendance. And we'll also provide professional development for teachers new to our district in either Bridges or CPM. Provide parent education. We've done a lot of work in this area as well, but we want to make sure we keep our families well informed of our math program and provide them strategies to support their children at home. In elementary, we'll be providing parents with an overview of grade level expectations at back to school nights, as well as host family math nights at each of our sites next year with targeted recruitment for our LCAP identified families. Our middle schools will provide parent workshops as well on the topic of supporting your child in math at the middle school. Targeted outreach again will be made to our LCAP targeted families. Our third step is about strengthening intervention and acceleration support for our students. We'll be providing professional development. This will be the second year of this professional development for both our resource and special day class teachers on our Bridges Intervention Program. We're going to continue with online targeted math intervention and acceleration programs at both our elementary and secondary schools, and we'll pilot new online personalized programs for both intervention as well as acceleration. Focus Area 2. Students will achieve substantial academic gains in English language arts and literacy. And as you saw in our budget, there's an increase in this budget for the 2016-17 years. We have a lot of things that will be happening, and I'd like to review them for you. In the area of strengthened classroom curriculum and instructional strategies, in elementary, we'll be providing professional development for our new reading adoption and aligning our overall reading and writing program. Diana Jones, who was formerly a 0.5 ELA TOSA, 0.5 Math TOSA, will become a full-time English Language Arts teacher on special assignment and will be leading this work in elementary. Instructional coaches will provide student-centered coaching with teachers and grade-level teams, as well as site professional development on our new reading program. Summer planning time will be provided for principals to work with their teachers to develop focus plans for the 16-17 school year. We'll also purchase much-needed books and materials to support our new reading adoption. In secondary, we will provide ongoing professional development for teachers with our ELA TOSA, Teacher on Special Assignment, and possible consultant. Standards-aligned units, lessons, and assessments will be revised, as well as curriculum support materials purchased. Both elementary and secondary will provide training for our new teachers along the way next year in our ELA. Educate parents. This is going to be especially important in elementary next year with a new reading adoption. What we're planning on including is site-based parent education workshops at all of our elementary sites, as well as a back-to-school night presentation about our new reading adoption that will include ideas for parents on how to support literacy in the home. The next area, strengthen interventions and accelerations. We'll continue our one-to-one reading program for first graders for one more year, as well as continue the Descubriendo la Lectura, or DLL, program at Pacheco, which is the equivalent of reading recovery, only in Spanish. Based on strong feedback from our stakeholders, we'll continue to fund the level literacy intervention at all nine of our sites that have primary students with the support of an LLI lead teacher. We're going to expand secondary intervention programs such as Read 180 and include a classroom coaching component for our teachers teaching that section. We'll be developing a research-based model of intervention for our long-term English learners and matrix that specially defines our EL support for middle and high school students. And we'll purchase online curriculum for special education classrooms. In the area of strengthening ELD curriculum, instruction, and assessment practices, we're going to continue with the EL specialist support at each of our elementary schools and EL instructional aides at our secondary schools to provide supplemental ELD for beginning English learners. In elementary, we'll provide ongoing ELD professional development for both the EL specialists and our instructional coaches. So it's kind of a trainer of trainers approach that then they'll be able to go back and coach and support classroom teachers on research-based ELD strategies. In secondary, ELD teachers will work directly with content area teachers to collaboratively design lessons that embed research-based ELD strategies. We'll also purchase supplemental instructional programs such as Rosetta Stone for our English learners. A lot will be going on in the area of mathematics and ELA.
Thank you. In our third focus area, we have providing access to a world-class STEAM and CTE program. So we had the pleasure of hearing a lot about our CTE program already tonight. But if you begin with implementing our next-generation science standards, we have a plan that we would like to continue as we have our science teacher on special assignment and our next-generation science steering committee. We will continue professional development for science teachers, including an elementary next-generation science standards summer camp for training for elementary, starting a 3-year transition to next generation science standards, and with training and materials from FOSS. We'll like to continue to purchase materials and equipment as it continues to align with the next generation science standards and lessons and units. We will also begin further development and implementation of our next generation science standards lessons, and then to develop and articulate our model STEAM programs. So we have provided some substitute time for site visitations for programs that are perhaps further along than us in STEAM programs or trying something different that maybe we haven't tried yet. Professional development also that includes project-based learning, which elementary has shown a lot of interest in. We'll increase our support for STEAM development at Pack Beach, as well as further developing our computer science pathway. Next, you see that we'd like to enhance and modernize elementary arts programs. This would be through an annual collaboration with teachers and professional development for our elementary music teachers. Next, you will see create and develop effective CTE pathways. So within the extensive plan that you will see soon, you will see that this has grown tremendously. So in large part due to the grants that we've received, SLOPE grant that was mentioned tonight, as well as the incentive grant. We're continuing with our Perkins grant and also received another grant to develop our computer science pathway that I just mentioned. So although this doesn't have an impact on our general fund, it has really allowed us the opportunity to develop our CTE pathways aligned to those 11 elements of a quality CTE program that I've mentioned with you before. So I'm really excited about this work. We'll also be adding Naviance to support our middle school counseling and support student leadership opportunities like Skills USA. We'll be exploring and coordinating teacher externships, connecting CTE courses with relevant market information, purchasing modernized equipment, and continuing to collaborate with band and choir teachers to modernize these programs as well. I'll hand it over to Ms. Frost for Focus Area 4, and I'll be back for 5.
Thank you. Focus Area 4, San Luis Coastal will create an intentional culture of care and intervention and support for our students. We actually have 7 broad categories under Focus Area 4. The first one is to enhance our therapeutic support model. And I want to remind you what the board approved last year. We continued our MFTI counseling on our campuses. We brought 504 support to our schools, and we expanded our PEI counseling at Pacific Beach. This year, we hope to continue all of those things and then add the following. We are hoping to increase our therapeutic model at Slo High from 1 paid day a week to 5 days a week with a fully licensed MFT. At Morro Bay High School, we'd like to expand from 1 paid day to 3 paid days of fully licensed MFT on that campus. We also hope to pay for 1 more MFTI 1 day a week at an elementary school, and then we certainly want to continue our 2 family advocates. We consider them very, very successful. What we've prepared in this plan is an enhancement of our therapeutic model to better support our students. Our second broad category is to strengthen special education opportunities for our students. Professional development plays a key role in this LCAP section. The things that we'd like to offer our teachers to support our students: UDL training, which is Universal Design for Learning Strategies, inclusion training for our general education teachers, training for our paraeducators to include ABA, which is applied behavioral analysis, and supporting including our general education students.
co-teaching strategies, and then eligibility areas and compliance issues. And that's not an exhaustive list by any means. Writing defensible goals, informative assessments for our students, and managing student behaviors are all topics that we're looking at for next year. In addition, we hope to enhance our inclusion opportunities for our special education students. Area number three is to provide support for EL, SED, and our foster and homeless youth. We will continue to provide a breakfast program at our sites and provide transportation for students participating in interventions and activities at the sites with the greatest need. Latino family literacy will be provided at every Title I elementary school and all secondary schools. You'll also see that we hope to pilot a program designed to increase the understanding of our EL parents regarding the education that their students are receiving. We hope that this pilot program, along with parent representatives attending the annual CABE conference, will continue to build a sense of confidence and advocacy for the education of their children among our EL parents. In area number four, we hope to strengthen our early education and identification of our pre-K students. The board has seen a longitudinal data regarding our Success for All preschool and our early intervention preschool at a recent publication. Both programs will continue to include certificated and classified staff, as well as materials and supplies to support the program. Each year, we further develop a connection between our SFA preschools and our early intervention preschools through combined trainings, and we plan to continue that this year as well. Finally, we'll be working to revise the preschool and TK report card. All right. Number five, strengthen district-wide multi-tiered systems of support. Time and effort was spent last year in redefining the EL supports at our sites. Next year, we will continue to refine all of our interventions at our sites, researching those that have been proven effective, and implement them for all of our struggling students. We will also continue our summer school programs and our ESY program. Finally, for the past year, we've looked for useful and intuitive software that might help us streamline our SST process. We think we found the right piece right with PowerSchool, so we'll be implementing that next year as well. In number six, we hope to ensure safe and nurturing campuses. While School Messenger to track attendance and PBIS will continue, those are things that you supported last year, we've added Web and Link Crew for our secondary schools to our LCAP. Web, W-E-B, is where everybody belongs. It's a middle school orientation and transition program that welcomes 6th and 7th graders and makes them feel comfortable throughout their first year of middle school experience. Through this nationally recognized middle school program, members of the 8th grade class are trained to act as positive role models, mentors, and teachers who guide these new 6th and 7th graders to their campus. Link Crew is very similar. It's a high school orientation and transition program that increases freshman success. In this program, members of the junior and senior class are trained to be Link Crew leaders who act as positive role models, motivators, student mentors for these incoming students. Both transition programs have enhanced anti-bullying efforts, reduced discipline issues, and increased school safeties in the campuses that have implemented them. We consider a byproduct of this program an opportunity to build more leaders on our campuses. We have our leaders through ASB. We have our leaders through the leadership program. This will give us more leaders on both our middle school and high school campuses. And then finally, our last category here is to strengthen the cultural proficiency in our organization. So the cultural proficiency continuum identifies the range of values and behaviors of an individual or the policies and practices of an organization reflecting their response to diversity. Our hope over a three-year period is to develop our own understanding of each leader's personal and our district's combined proficiency in this area. We'll be evaluating our assumptions and beliefs as they pertain to equity, achievement gaps, and our commitment to embracing the cultural differences expressed by all students and staff in San Luis Coastal. During this next year, which we'll continue or consider our pre-competence year, we will begin a self-reflection process that includes training for administrators and a reflection of our current district practices.
I will cover the last two focus areas. So at focus area 5, we have that we will expand our technology and promote innovation in order to provide students access to personalized learning and prepare for college and career readiness. So within our first goal, you can see that we would like to develop visionary leadership teams that really model best practices in the area of technology and innovation. We're looking to accomplish this through our EdTech TOSA, Jennifer O'Hagan, leading the EdTech lead teachers to provide on-site support with professional development. We'll continue to offer the popular Summer Tech Boot Camp, and as well as supporting Pacheco's two-way dual immersion program. Next, we'd like to modernize and improve classroom instruction to match current college and industry standards. So we'll continue to work with the teachers on utilizing Google Apps for Education to impact instruction. And this plan also includes device purchases for Laguna that would complete their one-to-one implementation, as well as device purchases for Morro Bay's first class of STEAM students. A big change to this plan is the inclusion of our yearly device replacement plan. This includes the ability to purchase devices based on our district's replacement plan. In the past, we've waited to determine if we could afford to replace devices, but devices have now become such an integral part of what the staff needs and what teachers are doing with students that we feel we can no longer have this as a possible budget item, instead moving it into our LEA plan addendum. So therefore, the $250,000 device replacement budget has been added into our LEA plan. We're also looking to develop an understanding and incorporate digital literacy skills. So we will continue our implementation of common sense media, including digital literacy, a focus around social media, cyberbullying, and provide parent information nights related to social media's impact, as well as facilitating our district technology's innovation advisory committee. In D, we'd look to research and implement online and personalized learning opportunities. So this year, we're looking to expand our MyOn site licenses to 9 elementary schools, utilize ebooks and databases, as well as continuing our support of the ETC portal as a support for teachers. Finally, to increase and improve communication through technology, we're looking to continue to use InfoSnap for online parent registration and to also purchase iPads and training for special education classroom teachers. Focus Area 6. You might be glad to see there's only 2 bullets. So we are looking to first improve instructional practices utilizing our SLC-USD adopted teacher evaluation process, the teacher evaluation system based on Charlotte Danielson's framework for teaching, as well as continuing to utilize TeachBoost. The final goal, I have to say, I'm personally excited about, as I believe that as we begin to utilize student data for better progress monitoring, this will be a big focus of ours for next year in the area of secondary. We will utilize grade level assessments and rubrics aligned to report cards, as well as provide professional development with support from Illuminate student data systems for elementary. Our elementary and secondary assessment TOSAs will also aid in the full implementation of Common Core aligned district common assessments, interim, and our state assessments. We'll continue with our Silicon Valley Math Institute scoring and training and provide progress monitoring for our English learners that are at levels 1 and 2. So those are our 6 focus areas and the information related to that. And if you have any questions, one of us will be happy to answer.
I do have thank you. So just to make sure that I'm clear, that on the other document, the LCAP plan, the dollar amounts are basically general fund dollar amounts that we're allocating because we think that's the funding necessary to progress on these identified LCAP focus areas and steps to get there, right?
That is absolutely correct. We do put a little bit of Title II money, which is for professional development, and a little bit of Title III money, which is for English learners.
Okay. Well, I think it's important, and I applaud the work and the appropriation of the money. I know it hurts because we're on a limited budget, so there's no easy thing, but I think this is a very appropriate use of our general fund dollars to help move the LCAP plan along. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Questenberry.
Thanks. I'm really excited
by what I'm seeing, especially by what I heard. So on focus area three, enhance and modernize the arts program. That's great, elementary. I'm wondering, as we continue to process and put STEAM into place, whether that enhance includes strengthening the link between the arts and project problem solving projects, the hands-on stuff, the STEAM stuff.
I think that would be correct through the influence that our music teachers are currently able and in the future able to have on classroom teachers because they are on all their sites. I think it's a loose link at this point, but would could be something we could look at more, you know, specifically in the future.
Okay, great. And then just again on focus area three, a lot of mention of the grants. Thank you, County Office. It's a lot of money coming in, upwards of $800,000 just on the SLOPE grants. And so, you know, you kind of get addicted to money. So, and all those good programs. So, is there some strategic planning amongst staff, or what do we do when the money's not there?
Yes, a lot of strategic planning is happening between the three of us with a lot of input from teachers. So along with each budget, there is a sustainability portion that we look at. Okay. So there are some components that major equipment purchases, for example, that obviously you wouldn't have to continue with major equipment purchases at that same rate, but we are looking at how we can continue to support those career technical education programs when the grants are finished.
Great, thanks. And just last, I think it was on focus four when you started talking about the we'll take eighth graders and have them working with sixth or seventh graders and high school. And I'm just like, that's so cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Quasimiri.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a few things I'd like to clarify. So when we're talking about the MFTs, marriage family therapists, and sometimes I heard you say MFTI. So
yes.
Are some of those MFTs and then some of them MFT interns?
Exactly. So an MFTI is an intern, and an MFT is a fully licensed marriage and family therapist.
Okay, and I heard you correctly that there'll be one provided.
So we're looking at 5 full days at the slow high.
Okay.
Three, but then we're looking at an MFTI to add to our grouping at one of our elementary schools. So that would be an intern. And honestly, we've had some really great response from our interns as well. And I think that's one of the things that we look at with our MFTs, the internship, the clinical work they have to do before they meet the criteria for this licensure.
This goes to the family advocates. We currently do have two.
We currently have two.
Through the link. Is this in addition to that, or is that a continuation of that?
This is a continuation of that. So we have our family advocates, and then we also have Melissa Musgrave, who works with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much for the presentation. We can see how much work went into it. And is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak to this item? Seeing no one, then, we thank you and we'll move on. Proposed new board policy 71, I think it's 7131. I've got a little icon on top of that last. 70. And I also have a little, what do you call that, dyslexia. 7310, naming of facilities. This is a first reading.
Thank you. And I do want to the last item, just so the board is aware of our timeline. At the next meeting, you will have the entire, what is it now, up to 149 pages, I think, LCAP in front of you with all of the stuff. And so so our purpose tonight was to give you that broad overview so we don't have to go line by line next week or at the next meeting. And so we'll have two public hearings so that the board, the public, the ability to make changes is available. Okay, so this board policy is a new board policy. In light of the fact that we're doing a lot of construction work our realm right now, we thought that we probably should either resurrect, because Mrs. Holmes and I weren't sure whether this was a board policy lost years ago or whether it was just sort of this tradition we had of in naming facilities. We have had a pretty long standing, at least in my tenure, of not allowing buildings or portions of buildings to be named after individuals, even though historically that's happened, obviously, in our school district. We have tried to avoid that. When Los Ranchos School was built, it was named after kind of the ranches in the community. When Monarch Grove was built, a committee of people came up with the name after the monarch butterflies that lived there. And so this is a suggestion. There are no laws or rules or hard in fast things that have to be done with the naming of facilities, but this is a suggestion. I gleaned some of this from CSBA policy that would suggest that we name facilities not after individuals, because those sometimes that can be a problematic thing. But to actually have a board policy that suggests that facilities would be named after the area they might be housed in. I did add here, for the board's discussion and direction, the option of having a building named after a person or an entity, say in the event somebody gave us a windfall of money, like the Clark Center in Arroyo Grande. You know, was his first name Cliff? Clark donated a ton of money, and a performing arts center was therefore named after him. So if the board wanted to consider having a naming right addendum to this policy, that in general we would name things after you know, community assets or not after people, but in the event that we wanted to specify and enter into an agreement to name a building after a person or an entity, a corporation, for example, that were to donate money, that here is some suggested language should you want to entertain that. I put that as optional. I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but it has been brought up by one of our board members and certainly something that could be considered by the board. Again, there really isn't a lot of Ed Code rules and regulations about this, but it's really a first reading and for your ability as a board to discuss on what you might want to do if you want to have a policy on the naming of facilities. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Mr. Millar. Oh, is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item?
Thank you.
Feel free.
Okay. I think it's a good policy. I was somewhat facetiously referring to the scoreboard controversy at a local school, but I think, I'm fine with the language. I think number five needs to be expanded. The board should retain the authority to terminate the naming rights for broader reasons than just those listed in number four, even though there's substantial items there. You know, you have circumstances where the naming rights. Let's say, what was the phony oil company in Houston? Enron. Yeah, I mean, if Enron, and then we find out, you know. So I think we need to retain more latitude to be able to terminate the naming rights. And I do appreciate the fact that the board may grant, which leaves the sole discretion in the board's hands, which I appreciate. But other than that observation, I don't have any problem.
Mr. Unger, followed by Mr. Buckman.
I would agree with you, Walter, and that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking specifically of the Cal Poly scoreboard, and I'll call it out for what it is. The part of the concern about the Cal Poly scoreboard was everybody recognized that there was a problem there, but it took a long time because of money involved to actually cover up Mr. Moriarty's name, and, you know, the people that were cheated out of money by him were wanting that money back. So there's an exchange there. So I would like to have us be able to look at a way of doing that if we go down that path. So I would agree with you on that, Walter.
So in speaking to Walter's comments and item number five as well, I'm thinking what I might like to have to look at as a board member that's going to vote on this is maybe some broader scope, or maybe it would be in the AR, Rick, and that might be an interesting thing to look at before coming back at the next meeting, because I think some of the concerns that have been raised maybe can covered in there. But for me, it's like, I don't know, somebody has a felony, and so there may be some checking of facts that we need to do before we even move forward, or if we have to sort of negotiate the unnaming of a building. Thanks.
Where are we? Mrs. Sheffer and then Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Mr. Pinkerton, do you recall at Arroyo Grande High School, was part of the deal with naming with Mr. Clark providing money that it be named, that he have naming rights?
I think it happened after the fact. I think the board decided to go and name it the Clark Center after the fact. So I don't think it was like you had to do it. I'm not positive on that for sure, but knowing Cliff Clark, I can almost guarantee you that there was
from what
you
I
have
know
to name
of
it after
him,
me type of thing. So
I
just
very
know.
Surprised. Yeah. So personally, at this point, I am leaning more towards the not the optional piece with just the naming of facilities and not being involved in the naming rights part of this. I think it can, there may be unintended consequences in ill will, in hurt feelings, in if we are presented with three names for one building, how we decide. So perhaps it's just taking the path of least resistance, but I'm inclined to go with the naming of facilities as presented above the optional section. That's just my thought at this time. Thank you.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Well, I was actually going to ask to see the language that you mentioned, Mr. Robinette, that exists regarding an entity, say, Google, if they wanted to build a facility here for our technical use and wanted it to be called the Google building. So is that a separate issue?
No, this is a up for grabs policy. I'm suggesting that's actually in here, that it could be granted to a person or an entity.
Okay, so we don't need anything further than that. Personally, I feel like I wouldn't want to turn down an offer like that. So I would like to have the language in this document that would allow us to consider that. I don't know that we'd have to grant it, but if we ever weren't in a position where we need to find sponsors for theaters or technical facilities.
Mr. Quessenberry.
Well, a couple of questions I have are these observations. We could have a charter cable TV football stadium maybe here at the Temple site under this policy. That's a possibility, as well as a Google technology. Okay, and then in item 4 of the optional, it says the use of drugs. I'm assuming that those would be illegal drugs. We wouldn't count out Eli Lilly if they wanted to.
Probably sure. Not. No.
I think you're that probably correct in that assumption.
Okay. All right. And that's all I have to say right now. I am leaning towards Ellen's point of view. Facilities, but it does make sense if someone was to give us something of significant value that perhaps a nature.
Well, for myself, I'd like to chime in with my feelings here.
Yeah.
I have concerns about this board policy for reasons different than my colleagues. I am concerned with issues of equity. If a benefactor came along and said that they wanted to put a technology center on the San Luis Obispo High School campus, whether we named it after them or not, would that then, because we have tried to avoid having have and have not schools, would such a center then be absent at Morro Bay High School? We would create inequity. So I, for me, certainly I would welcome, you know, a gift of funds to be used at the district's discretion or even with, you know, some input, but I don't want to enter into a board policy that would allow for an inequitable campus structure between the high schools. And I'm viewing this as at the high schools, though there could be, I suppose, some kind of a generous donation to an elementary school or a middle school. But again, we would enter into the same problem. So I think for me, I have no interest in this option. I'll support the board policy as it reads above the optional portion. And I think that if someone came forward and wanted to contribute and it was viable and it didn't interfere with equity between schools, then a subsequent board would always have the right to go back and review this policy and amend it if necessary. Mr. Millar.
I support the option, primarily because some of the things you indicated we'll never know. The option to entertain the issue and make a decision about it isn't there. And sure, we could go back and change the policy if PG&E shows up wanting to do something. We already have board policy in place for how we handle donations in order to distribute them in as equitable a manner as possible. So I would rather have the language in there and then have our board consider the facts and the circumstances, dictate the circumstances under which we are willing to accept any kind of donation joined with naming rights. But without the optional policy in there, we basically, you know, are kind of closing the door.
To naming rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, naming rights that involve significant funding for the district should at least be considered. We don't have to do it.
Mr. Buckman.
So every time somebody speaks, I'm vacillating and thinking more because it's all adding to the discussion, and I really appreciate the discussion. Someone mentioned Enron earlier, and I thought that we'd have a good compromise if we just took the optional naming rights and in the first sentence, the board may grant to any person. We just remove person, and then we have entity, but then do we really want to end up with something named Enron after, you know, everybody we know probably got touched by that. So I'm still struggling with this. I'm going to sort of keep leaning towards the optional and just remove the person and just leave it with entity. Just my two cents.
Okay, so what is the desire of the board at this point?
Well, I agree with Mr. Millar. I'd like to keep the optional in there because it keeps our options open, as it were. I think, though, what Mr. Robinette is hearing is some concern about at least from Mr. Millar and me, and I think probably from Mr. Buckman as well. I'm not sure how, but I'm not getting a sense that we have a consensus on this for the concerns about equity, the concern about naming something after someone who ultimately turns out to be not such a great actor, those kinds of things. But I do agree with Mr. Millar that I think we should have something in writing so that at least if someone, a benefactor, does bring something forward, we have a method of considering it that would be in the district and the students of this district's best interest.
I'd just like to comment on the equity issue, which is I appreciate your sensitivity to that, Marilyn, and I think that we could look at it in a slightly different way, which is that if if, for example, a donor came forward and built a building on one campus, and that would, in a sense, free up other funds, you know, for us to then build an equitable kind of building for another facility or another school. So I'm not as concerned about the equity issue on the face of it, because I think it just would allow us to do more things to, you know, we could spread the money around a little bit differently, if that helps you at all.
Maybe. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I just think if someone came forward and wanted to build a, you know, a $5 million building, that I don't think we could go to the general fund and find the money there to replicate that building at another campus. So you don't want to turn down money, but on the other hand, I believe it is a value of this board to not have and have not campuses, and that there should be equity as much as possible. It's just my feeling. Mrs. Sheffer.
Just a quick clarification. We do not have an existing policy.
We do not. This would be a new policy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So just lastly, as we're approaching the Measure D projects more rapidly, it's my sense and my strong feeling that we need to have some policy in place as we're starting to move along now. So I'm looking at my fellow board members. I'm feeling a sense of urgency, and so I'm not sure how we convey that to staff, because we're asking a lot right now to sort of interpret what we're saying.
Well, does someone want to make a motion? I don't know what direction we're giving.
I would suggest, instead of making a motion, that we give Mr. Robinette a chance to bring this back. This is only a first hearing, and see if he can address the concerns that I'm sure he's heard.
Well, I guess the question I would have is if there's consensus one way or the other on including the option to grant naming rights under some sort of board agreement, given the fact that cleaning up that last part to allow the board the authority to terminate for any reason or various and sundry reasons. Look at that language. But is it the consensus of the board that we would include that section in the policy, or is it the consensus of the board that we would leave that out? I guess that's the only thing I would like to have information on, if you have that at this point.
Well, thumbs up, thumbs down for keeping the option. So then, Mr. Robinette, you see, I believe it was 5-2.
I see a 5-2 consensus there. So I'll bring it back with the.
I'm doing the New York thing.
Mrs. Rogers, is it your pleasure for me to bring it back with this option still in place, clean up the language in the option, and then you can reconsider it?
Do those who support the option want to see some modifications to it? I believe that's the direction.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then let's see. Moving on to item 9.03, proposed board policy 3515.7, business and non-instructional operations firearms on school grounds. This is, again, a first reading.
Me again. This is a new policy, and you know, I'm not really sure if the laws have changed in California, but we've sure gotten a lot of legal advice lately from various organizations admonishing us to take a stand and make a policy one way or the other on concealed weapons on a campus. Because there are, in the state of California, there are what's called CCW licenses, carried concealed weapon licenses, that people are able to ascertain. They're different in different counties and regions and unincorporated areas, but it certainly exists. A school district can take a policy that says we're prohibiting all weapons on campus, firearms specifically on campus, other than those people who basically carry firearms as part of their work, which is specified in penal code, or it can take a position saying, yeah, we'll allow concealed weapons on our campuses. Our insurance company, our legal advisors are all saying you're a lot safer to just say no to firearms on campus. In fact, I have a feeling we would not be insured any longer by our CISC if we were not to adopt this. But we are, it's really strongly recommended that we adopt a policy that says one way or other where we stand on firearms on campus, and that's what this does in a very simple way. It basically, in the second section, just so you're clear, Penal Code 626.9 L through O is that kind of narrow definition of who are able to carry firearms in a school campus. And it basically is peace officers. It's basically sheriff, police officers, people who would carry a gun in their line of work. It also specifies that if you were a high school that had an ROTC program and a shooting range, which we do not, we used to, but we do not, that there would be, you know, that ability to have ammunition on a campus. But it's a very narrow penal code that would prohibit employees, guests, people on campus from carrying firearms. And basically, this policy is saying that we do not allow that, and the superintendent or designee will not grant permission to any other individual to carry a firearm or ammunition. This is the first reading, and again, we've been advised by our legal counsel that it's a very good idea to have this policy in place so there's never a question.
Okay, but Mr. Muller.
I'll entertain questions.
Well, I would support this policy as written, I believe. I have concerns about what I would call amateurs bringing any kind of firearm anywhere, actually, but specifically on our campuses. The United States has seen, for example, a tremendous increase in the incidence of toddlers shooting people this year. Having firearms on campus, the training that police officers undergo in order to maintain their weapons certification is extensive, and I can't see that a civilian coming onto campus would have that level of expertise and ongoing training in order to keep them and the rest of the campus safe. So I'd absolutely support keeping concealed firearms off of our campuses, except in the case of police officers and others.
Well, I think I'd just rather say no. Partly because reading what is it, 626.9 of the Penal Code, besides being absolute torture, has a lot of exceptions in it. And one of them is a person who has a restraining order and are in fear of their life. Recently in the news, we've had two instances of well-intentioned armed people coming to the aid of others with bad results. So if it's an option to say no firearms on campus, I would rather us do that. We can work with local law enforcement to establish an understanding about their officers coming on campus armed, and obviously our school security officers. Would be in there. I don't know that we have to. I mean, I don't. Do we have to go with all the exceptions that are listed?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. In the CSBA guidelines and in the Lozano-Smith guidelines, they both list that particular penal code as the way that you keep firearms off campus. The other options, you know, open the door to people having weapons. So I don't know, but I can seek the answer to that because, again, you know, there are those kind of odd exceptions that were in that penal code, and not in Ed Code 30310, but in that penal code that kind of you kind of go,
well,
really?
Not so much in L through subpart O, but
well, it's only L through O that would be part of it. And I think that pretty much is peace officers, National Guard,
armed security guards,
it has a section there about, I think, retired,
right. Yeah, it does.
Which is kind of odd to me. But it's only that specific section, and that is.
Did I say that? Well, I did.
That is the language suggested for us. Is L through O exclusive? But I don't know what you know. As a law enforcement person, Mr. Miller, I don't know how you read that, and if you want me to seek more legal counsel to say, let's not let anybody, but we do have school resource officers. We do have people who do come onto campus and policemen that come on campus that carry guns as a line of work. So I don't think we could do a total prohibition to firearms. Probably okay. Not a good idea, too.
I think on some level, I'm feeling a little uncertain if we could get some assurances, if other board members are so inclined, from Lozano that this is the narrowest tailoring of our, of what we can prohibit. I would feel better about the policy, and I'll defer to the other board members.
I don't know who was first, Mr. Quisenberry, then Mr. Buckman.
Well, I was just going to express my support for this board policy, and I appreciate Mr. Unger's comments and Mr. Millar's comments.
And now that we've had this discussion about that particular section of the penal code, I think it might be worthwhile for us to bring this back, and so that we're all a little clearer on it. But I certainly would say that, you know, the sworn officers who, like you say, sheriffs and the various police departments and so forth, I'm comfortable with them possessing a firearm on campus, but no one else.
Thanks. So so I spent some time today talking to the sheriff's department just to try and get some guidance and what some of their feelings might be. Very strongly not expressing opinions, just answering questions very factually. And so as I looked at the people that were exempt, Mr. Millar mentioned the retired police officers, and obviously important, wonderful service that they've done, things that I would never do, that law enforcement does. But so some of the things I learned is active law enforcement does training three times a year, and often or always includes shoot, don't shoot situation. So they, I think we've seen it on television where some guy pops out. I think they do it with technology now. Retired officers. I'm sorry.
I hope so.
They're using it like a video game now, I guess. But they're still, they get that. There's training three times a year. The retired officers are trained once a year and are. And not always a shoot, don't shoot drill. So the question I have is maybe for Lozano Smith is can we, while everybody would be allowed on campus, can we ask people that are carrying a concealed weapon and not in uniform to come at least check in at the office and let us know that they're on campus? Some parameters, some help for staff, because but I don't know whether that's even permissible. So, just a little more information on how we deal with people that are exempt, but we don't know they're there.
Yeah, practically, I think this is really just police on campus doing presentations, being school resource officers, but then also those people that have to come onto campus for emergency purposes. SWAT teams, you know, police officers for, you know, emergencies. And so I think that's really what that is, that leaning, that exception is leaning towards, is those people who, you know, it's part of their line of work and they're on campus for very specific purposes. But certainly.
Okay, thanks.
So what is the direction? What is the board's pleasure?
I think Mr. Millar, I would go along with Mr. Millar's suggestion that we ask Mr. Robinette to talk to Lozano Smith and see if there's any way of tailoring this so that it's even more restrictive than the penal code. I would be in favor of that.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I would prefer it to be as restrictive as possible. I'm really not even interested in retired officers being on campus with weapons. Okay. If it were actively sworn law enforcement, that's about as far as I'd like to go. But I think looking into seeing if that's possible or what Lozano Smith recommends would be helpful to us.
So if I may, for the board's interest, why don't I in Friday notes include that section of penal code so everyone is, you know, on the same page as far as what that says, and then before the next meeting get an opinion on, it sounds like, the most restrictive language we can have on the restriction of firearms. Is that the direction I'm sensing?
Mr. Mueller?
I would just add that I agree with Mark's point that for, let's say, armed security guards, which are one of the exceptions,
yes,
doesn't necessarily mean that it's our armed security guard, and retired police officers, notwithstanding my humorous aside, somewhat humorous aside, there's no reason for a retired police officer to be coming on campus armed because they're not in the line of duty or things like that. So I do think some language that requires reporting into the office and declaring that they are carrying a firearm should be incorporated in there somehow. We could probably put an exception for officers responding to emergency calls or calls for service is kind of the term of art. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
Okay, then. Mr. Robinette, are you clear?
I think so. Thank you very much.
Okay. Item 9.04, Measure D, bid number 264, the Morro Bay High School new swimming pool. Mr. Pinkerton.
So, Kim, if you can put the, I guess it's kind of tied on the screen there. So we had our bid for the Morro Bay High School swimming pool project last week. We had five bidders that submitted documentation. As the board hopefully knows from discussing this before, We're using ASAP Reprographics to put all the bid documents out, to be public, to add addendums, to make sure that all the contractors are there. We have a bid walk. The contractors are required to attend so that they can, you know all the ins and outs, be fully prepared to bid. And so we were actually excited about the bid numbers that came out. We had kind of our low estimate at the time was 4.867 million in terms of for the pool bid itself. This bid, without the 10%, which I'm going to have Ron talk about in just a minute, Mr. Holcomb talk about, came in at 4.751 million, so a little bit below our estimate. When we got the initial estimate, we actually had put in some alternatives. So a couple of the rooms that storage and kind of a room that we can use as a ticket booth, work with the city as well too. For those spaces, we put those in as alternatives just in case the bid came in high, we would take those out. So that number that I quoted includes those two buildings. So again, excited about the fact that came in where we expected, a little bit lower at the time, and so those were positive things. I'm going to have Ron talk a little bit just quickly about why the 10% allocation is tied to this bid as well.
The provision for a 10% allowance was included in our bid documents. As a project is moving along, the law says that if you're going to authorize a change order, you have to go to the board. So that means stop construction until we come back to the board and approve it. Now, as a practical matter, that's not done very often. So we wanted to cast it in a framework that is legal and that the board's aware of, and any change orders of that kind would of course be, you know, transmitted, the information would be transmitted directly to the board and weekly updates or that sort of thing. So the 10% allowance just simply gives us the right to move ahead if we dig up an oil tank or some other untoward event occurs. So be ye completely satisfied that I'll watch those change orders. I'm not a believer in them. So. But it is pointed out that you have to have a change order to change a contract up or down. Mm-hmm. That's the mechanism. So, but anyway, the 10% allowance is simply for expediency, not for lack of transparency.
We have two.
Okay.
Any questions on that 10% allowance aspect with the bid?
No. You do? Mr. Millar?
So we've awarded the bid, the work to Red Mountain Services. And the total is going to be the $5,278,000, which includes the two alternatives?
Yes.
Okay, so now...
And the 10%.
The award is what we're here to decide.
Okay, the 10% is...
It's above and beyond the base bid. It is an allowance. So give us your bid and then add 10% to that. So that's within the contract amount for us to administer. But the 10% never leaves the district's hands. It's okay. Always the district's money.
But those two 10% are included in the $5,278,947.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, we're going to build the pool, build the two buildings, and unless something untoward happens.
$4,751,000.
That was the base bid.
Without 10% added on for those, for allowance of whatever.
Okay, but we have allowed that. We have agreed to that. That's what I'm trying to get a handle on.
Say it again.
We have agreed that we're going to do the two alternatives in addition
yes.
to the base bid.
It's a little confusing. Yeah. The two alternatives were additive in nature. So without those alternatives, do we have the number? It's $4,005,000 maybe or somewhere in that region.
Well, we start off with their total bid with a 10% allowance. What's that 10% allowance for?
Same thing.
Okay.
If you take the base bid, if it's with the 10% allowance, divide it by 10, multiply it times 9, that is their base bid. So the 10% on the bid form is actually shown.
I haven't had the new math curriculum.
Well, yeah, no, this is not Common Core. This is old boy stuff.
So we're committing to building the pool, those two buildings.
Yes.
And each one of those bids has a 10% allowance.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes, along with the main bid for the pool. So when you do a cost estimate, you get a number. So initially, $4.8 million, that's kind of what we set, our overall budget, right? You still don't know what our bid's going to come in. They can be higher, lower. No matter what, we wanted to maintain these very first projects. We have to stay on budget so that we can make sure we get those other projects done down the road. So very important for us. So that's why those alternates were kind of set. Just in case the bids came in high, we could maybe not build those now, come back later if we have money after we've done all the other projects and add them in.
Well,
in this case, though, because the bid came in where we had estimated, actually a little bit below the cost estimate, we feel good about moving forward and doing the entire project this time.
And there's very, very strong legs in our contract exactly how that 10% can be charged, enumerated, broken down. It has to be backed up by invoices. It's very, very detailed.
So... So I just wanted to make sure the board understands the 10% aspect of it before I move on to other, because I have more to talk about in terms of the bid, and we had a bid protest, those types of things.
So okay. I may be suffering from the new math problem as well. So on this table that's created, the amount that the district would spend, the upper amount that we could spend would be the 5.2?
Yes.
Okay, but our original estimate was down in
4.86.
Okay, thanks.
The base bid, base bid, even with take the 10% contingency off, is 4.75.
Okay, I'm confused now.
Okay.
So, would the base, okay, I'm assuming that there's a 10%
yes.
contingency
in
on
each three, all
on
three
all
of
three of them.
Yes.
So if I took 10% off of each add alternate and the base bid, would that then be my contract amount? My base contract amount?
Would be $4,751,000.
It's kind of tricky math. In other words, 10% off doesn't equal 90% of the base number. So if you take the amount with the 10%, divide it by 10 and multiply it times 9, then you get the actual amount. Is that it's tricky. It's like
I'm never going to do that.
Additive discounts or deductive discounts.
All I want to know is if I take the $5,000,002, subtract something close to 10%.
Right.
Am I going to be at my base contract?
Yeah, you'd actually be about $50,000 high. Because it's more than 10% going that direction. That's kind of it's very confusing.
So the 10% just kind of floats. It floats in with us.
It's not a real number. Their base contract is their contract. But built within it is an additional 10% in case we bump our nose on something during project that is a pre, if you want to call it a pre-approved change order amount that follows strict stipulations in the contract how it's managed.
Okay.
It never goes to the contractor.
Unless he earns it.
Yes.
Unless he provides evidence and earns it, right?
Right.
Evidence that it's not in the plans and specs.
Okay. So,
Marilyn, just...
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, ma'am. So, Ryan, with all of this, so the base bid without the alternatives would get us the swimming pool minus a ticket booth and a room.
And a storage room. Yep.
And a storage room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I know you're talking about bringing the money forward. The difference between the base bid, 4.7, and the 52... I'm coming up with about, what, 500?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks.
Which is about 10%.
Okay, so I'd like to go to the public.
No, I'm not done.
Oh,
so I have
with
more.
This
I just,
item?
Okay. No, I'm not done with this item. Yeah, I just want... I just know this. It's a new thing for the board. It's part of the contract. So basically, the board is pre-approving an amount of potential for change or up to 10% tonight, right? That would still have to move forward in terms of the district would have to work with the contractor if there was a change order, if there were extra costs. That's kind of what that 10% amount is. But the contract to the contractor is for that base bid amount, the $4,751,046. Okay?
Okay. And so as not to delay construction,
yes,
the board is in essence authorizing change orders up to whatever the 10% figure is, $500,000.
Yes.
But how would the board be apprised of any significant change orders?
Friday notes, monthly study sessions, board meetings, Tuesday nights.
Okay. So, because I don't know, I can't speak for my fellow board members, I don't want to know when the swing of a door has changed. But if we spend $125,000, I'd like to...
Yeah.
To just know what that
Agreed.
Is. Okay.
I think we should tell you all change orders and let you know, let the board know. And I know our CBOC is
What did I ever do
know.
To you?
It'll be important. Whether you ask questions, at least you'll know.
Okay.
Have
that Madam President.
So,
yes, Mr. Buckman. I'm sorry, Mr. Buckman.
Go ahead. So if I can ask. So, Ron, we're pre-approving change orders as the board now. Is this dollar amount? I mean, $500,000 is what I'm hearing. Is that about right?
It's $4 million. Pardon me. It's $475,000.
Okay,
the base. Actually, without the additive alternates, the bid came in at $4.5 million.
Right, but so we're talking about
$251,000, roughly, onto that for the additive alternates, and then 10% on top of all of those numbers.
Okay, so he's trying to bribe me with cookies. So we're pre-approving if. There were lots and lots of change orders. We're pre-approving, I'm sorry, I'm just going to go back to my, about $500,000 more.
You're allowing the latitude, but of course that wouldn't happen in 1 month. So,
well, yeah.
You could certainly instruct us to bring an accounting forward at every study session and every board meeting, which would be prudent to do.
Okay.
We'll be doing that.
What are they? What do they look like?
And what do they look like? And then at that point, the swinging doors. So if the board decides, well, that's not really a change order we want to do or we approve, at that point do we get to take it off?
Well,
or we've already pre-approved it?
It would have been pre-approved. It's really you're saying your staff has the ability to discern knowledgeably how to move forward. And, you know, what we, I mean, in theory, if we discovered that we left out a bathroom door completely, this would allow us to put the bathroom door in and keep rolling without stalling the project.
Okay, and so you are here because of all the experience and all the help you've given districts. So does $500,000 seem excessive to you, or $475,000? Does that seem excessive, or is that
It was
ballpark?
Suggested by our attorneys. I think that's certainly a way outside upward number. I know
it is.
In our own company experience or my company experience, the change order rate was less than 1%, but 7% is kind of ordinary. But if we ran into a burial ground in the middle of that, you could eat up every penny of that. Okay. We don't see it, but there's certainly that possibility at Morro Bay.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I understand, and I agree mm-hmm. that there has to be latitude for field condition changes. Mm-hmm. You run into things, and you don't want to stop work, and somebody has to be able to sign off on increased costs. It sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but I really think it's unlikely that we're going to spend $500,000 in change orders unless we hit something substantial that's unexpected. So is there anything additional, or shall I go to the public?
I just want to make sure that you're fully aware of what you're approving tonight, how that works. The 10% I know is something that's new, so I wanted to make sure that the board understood that. We did have a bid protest from Main of Construction, which was the second lowest bid at the bid. And basically the protest centered on two things. One was that Red Mountain had not included a fire sprinkler sub as part of their bid. And the second one refers basically to a state agency issue of whether or not Red Mountain, which is an Alaskan-based company but has an office in Avila Beach, works, has been doing California construction for many years, but has been doing federal work, not necessarily state work. So that was the second aspect of the protest, was whether or not Red Mountain could bid this in terms of a public bid. And because Alaska gives preferences to contractors, would that kind of apply to Maino Construction Firm? So those were the two protest areas that were brought up through this. So we, of course, go to Red Mountain, give us evidence of both things. So they were actually able to, because the fire sprinkler company, the bid itself was less than one half of 1%, they actually didn't have to list the subcontractor, but they went ahead and sent us that actual bid, which would show the dollar amounts, which corresponded correctly. The second aspect is still something that's been hotly debated, I would say, between our attorney, Deidre Sakai, with DWK, and Mr. Maino and Maino Construction and his attorney, in terms of that public contract code, of whether or not, being an Alaskan company, are they part of the state agency that has to apply to that 6107 public contract code. So our attorney is telling us no, that it doesn't apply, basically, because to a local school district, because we are a local public agency. We are not a state agency. So,
can you give that whole thing to us? Could you simplify that for me? I don't understand.
Mr. Holcomb, jump in.
Well, the origin of the law was, if one state gives preference to its own people and punishes other states, correspondingly, the next state will say, okay, we'll up you on that. And so if you come into our state, then we're going to give 5% to our agencies.
Okay.
But if you look at public contract code, just go to the index. Part one is general provisions. Part two are rules about contracting for state agencies. And there are 371 of those state agencies. Part three are bidding rules and contract law regarding districts and local agencies. And I think there's counties, there's cities and towns, school districts, and special districts. So the actual body of law is separated within public contract code about those two different kinds of agencies. One are state and the other are local. The protest centered around a portion of the state rules, which simply don't apply to local agencies, according to our attorney. And if you just go on the index for public contract code and say, well, is there a difference between state and local? And it's very, very clear. There's a body of law about state, and that's where this is found. And there's a body of law about local. You, in fact, take on the responsibility that the state would have under a state agency. So, but local agencies have a tremendous amount of autonomy under the law.
Thank you. That was a simplification, and I appreciate it.
Walter.
Mr. Millar.
Within the contract that Red Mountain Services would enter into with us, do they submit to the jurisdiction of California courts in case there's a legal dispute?
Yes. Yes.
Expressly.
It says California law shall govern, but in that law, eight local agencies and state agencies are treated differently. There's different rules.
No, I understand. I'm more concerned about it. I work for companies that go out of their way to not be amenable to service of process within certain states. Nothing shady or anything. It's just how you organize your business. I just want to make sure that we would not have any difficulty bringing an Alaska-based company, even with a local office, into California courts to resolve any disputes.
Our documents say that it's governed by the rules and the laws of the state of California. Furthermore, our county.
Good. Yeah, you wanted the venue to
focus it right on down.
All right, thank you.
So we've had many discussions.
Mr. Beckman.
Thank you. So in terms of being able to complete projects down the road, and mm-hmm. we don't know whether there's going to be inflation and we're going to run into something at another site. My question is, can Alternate 1 and Alternate 2, which you referred to as something we might have left off...
If we had to.
And be done if we had to. Mm-hmm. So at this point, at this juncture where we are tonight, could I propose that we leave those off to ensure that we have that money, even though it's not a lot, and then do those two projects later on?
I mean, we could. I don't think I would at this point in terms of looking at our overall estimate, looking at our projects, the fact that it came in under bid, that we can get that accomplished. You know, we'll probably be doing this, you know, with other projects along the way just in case in terms of things as we go. But based on talking to Mr. Palazzo, talking to Mr. Holcomb, talking about the overall program, looking at this particular bid, these programs, it makes sense to go ahead and accomplish those right now. You're actually going to probably get the work done cheaper if you do it all at one time versus having somebody come in later and, you know, they're not there. They have to start over. Yeah.
There's one other thing that's important. These buildings really make our pool at Morro Bay accessible for the community. So they're actually the community component of this project, and would be, it'll be half the price now, and 5 years from now will surely be a great deal more.
And I assume the prices, the bids that we received are good 30 days? So if we held off and rebid those components, the prices would likely rise.
Well, they're buildings that are within the project, so it would be very awkward.
I know, it doesn't make sense to hold off, but I'm just looking for another reason why it doesn't make sense.
Well, you'd have to, if you rebid them...
Downstream somewhere.
Yeah, or ask the contractor a year from now to reprice them, you just lose cost control. And if you go out to bid, then you can't mix the two contractors, it just gets to be an entanglement, which would surely cost us money.
Does that satisfy you, Mr. Buckley?
Oh, I'm satisfied, yeah.
Okay, so is there any additional comment, or shall I go to the public?
No, I'm still going, sorry.
Oh, okay.
A couple more things, sorry.
You tell me when I can go to the...
It's okay, I want to make sure that as we go through, if there's questions, that we're making sure. So just to kind of end the conversation with this today, so Mainland Construction did ask me to have the board not vote on this tonight, wait 2 weeks to really flesh out the response, make sure that we're kind of in line with this bid protest, but after talking with Mr. Holcomb, talking with Mr. Palazzo, listening to our our attorney, Deidre Sakai, DWK, we feel that we should go forward, have the board award this to Red Mountain tonight, and move forward. And I'm now
Mr.
officially
Mr. Millar.
So if we approve it tonight and the bid challenge goes forward, and let's just say the challenge prevails, mm-hmm. what's the remedy for the challenger?
The remedy is, if they prevailed in court, they would be due the cost of their bid preparation. That's what the law says. They would be due the cost of their bid preparation, nothing else.
Okay. Thank you.
And then we'd have to defend against Red Mountain should we decide. So it's sticky wicket.
So it's really with design, bid, build, lowest responsive bidder. You really kind of pushed to do that. Again, of course, if there were some major issues in terms of the bid protest, that makes sense. But based on what our attorneys are telling us, based on what we know today, I am recommending that the board go ahead and approve the contract and bid grant the award to Red Mountain LLC. I'm done.
Sorry. Okay. So now, is there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this item? Sir.
Hello, board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Tom Mano, Mano Construction. We're the apparent low bidder, as Ryan pointed out, on the pool project. We do have what we feel is a valid protest in place on the project. I'm here to respectfully request that the district or that the board postpone the award of this contract until such time that we can bring what I feel is a pretty serious matter in the future bidding of your projects, the dissemination, if you will, of the Section 6107 and whether it applies to local school districts or not. The word public entity is also used in that section. That wasn't brought to your attention. 6107, Public Contracts Code. I'm not here to cause trouble. I know I told the board at a study session that I'd protest everything I second on. I didn't live up to that. I let a few of them go because those bids are clean. The Red Mountain bid has other issues in it, which I leave to the administration to determine whether those are valid or not. I will compliment the administration, and as a bidder on every project except for one last week, the process was very well run. You should feel good as a board that your people running the project. I bid a lot of work to a lot of agencies. I also ironically win a lot of protests. So that includes with the state, local agencies, et cetera, because we feel that we're reading this section correctly. And with a two-week extension to the award, I think that we could come to resolution, and I'm perfectly willing, and I put in writing to Ryan that if I'm wrong, I'll step down. I have no issue with that. I'm not looking to pick a fight with the school district. I'm looking to defend my interests as a business owner, the interests of my employees, my stockholders, et cetera. And I still have not received any kind of satisfactory answer from the district, including from their attorney. Her conversations with our attorney today did not present any case law to disprove our side. And based on that, I guess it's like any argument. You know, there's an opinion on both sides. I just respectfully ask that you give it this two-week window, which doesn't affect your completion at all, to hash things out, because this code section, like I said, chances are Mano's going to bid against this contractor again. Am I going to protest the bid again on the same basis? Of course I am, if I'm within the 5% allowance. It's a very convoluted code. There's a lot of, like a lot of public contracts code, it's not clear. I think probably Mr. Millar can vouch for the fact, having probably read many of these in his time. Along those lines, I guess I would also say perhaps I didn't understand, but could you just clarify for me, are you going to award the 10% at this time, or are you going to award only the base bid plus the alternates, holding back the 10%? Because I'm confused there. Can anyone answer that for me?
The 10% is not an award. It's called an allowance above the award.
Right. So you're going to to clarify, you're going to issue a contract to the low bidder for their base bid amount plus the base bid amount of their alternates.
And an allowance of 10%. It'll be in the contract amount, but it's like a leaseback contingency. It doesn't belong to the contractor. Neither does this.
However, I would alert the board that if you awarded a contract for that 10%, you'd pay bond on that. The contractor would have to pay bond on that. That's why I bring it to your attention that from a contracting perspective, if you award me another $500,000 worth of contract, I have to insure that money and I have to bond it, which I'm a total advocate of having a contingency. I think that's responsible accounting, but I'd caution you in how you award your contract. If you award a contract for $5 million instead of $4.5 million, the contractor pays a bond on $5 million, not on $4.5 million, whether it's used or not, until such time the contract is completed.
So I think that amount's about $7,500.
Okay, I think that what's happened
I know here what my is bond amount is.
We neglected to set the timer so that you were not held to 3 minutes and we are engaging in conversation, which we're not able to do. Mr. Pinkerton, Mr. Holcomb, what you're advising the board to do is to go forward at this time?
Right, legal counsel, we've gone over and over and over with them and they're competent.
Your mic.
I'm going to support waiting 2 weeks.
I'm inclined to support it as well if there is no... if it's not to the detriment of the project.
That would absolutely be the caveat for me, too. But I'm inclined to wait 2 weeks as long as it doesn't... As long as, as you say, there's no detriment to the project, no detriment to the completion of the project. But...
Mr. Alton.
Well, I will point out there would be at least that kind of period before we would issue a notice to proceed, and if something valid came forward, we simply wouldn't issue the notice to proceed. So the onus then is on the contractor. They'd have the expense. But if they were found to be not a responsive bidder, I think the way I'm looking at it, we've said there was no case law presented. But there was no case law presented in the other direction by the opposing attorney. So apparently there is no case law. So we would go back and rely on counsel. They've spent a good amount of time in the district resources.
I'd kind of like to have the board to have a chance to discuss it.
Well, I'll call on you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you. First of all, I don't support postponing it. I mean, is this what we're going to do throughout the $171 million expenditure, is ignore the recommendation of staff, our attorneys, and postpone it? And I don't give legal opinions as a school board member, but I did note that 6107 is within a section of the public contract code that discusses state agencies, which I believe was Mr. Holcomb's point. This, you know, there's a lot of areas in the law where there's no case law. Those are usually the straightforward areas that don't get litigated and go up on appeal very much. So I don't support postponing, and I think we need to defer to staff and counsel on this.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I was going to make a similar point, that it sounds as though we have been in touch more than casually, in what I would hope is an informative and thoughtful manner with our legal counsel. And I'm comfortable proceeding upon the recommendation of legal counsel stating that they feel that it would be appropriate to do so under these circumstances.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I'm relying on Mr. Holcomb's comment that we will know within 2 weeks the outcome in any case before we proceed with any dealings or kind of sealing of the deal is what I understand you to be saying. So for that reason, I would be okay with approving this now so that we could go forward.
Is there any additional board comment? Okay.
I'll move approval of the bid for the Morro Bay High School swimming pool as presented by staff.
So we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
I want to go ahead and approve this. I understand that I understand that this is going to pass, and I will vote yes on it. Because I want the project to move forward. But I'm also concerned about the things that Mr. Mano said, and I'd like actually to hear back what the ultimate result of this is. And I believe that Mr. Mano has presented some information to me that I didn't have before. So I will vote yes because I don't want to delay the project.
For that reason, I am voting no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we have six, was it six ayes? One nay. Okay. Moving on, we have item 9.05, Measure D, bid number 265, Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School tennis court modernization. Mr. Pinkerton.
So second bid from last week. This was the tennis court project for both Morro Bay High School, San Luis Obispo High School. Again, to kind of bring one contractor in to do both projects. We felt that that would be more cost efficient for the contractor themselves. We received the four bids that are in front of the board today, the $1.528 million. This does not include the 10%, so we don't have to go through the 10% discussion. This was Mr. Holcomb. Look, we will have items that will not have 10%.
Right, so we have those options. If something is really, really simple and looks clean and clear, we don't see the need for that.
Okay, so this would be a project we would be coming back to the board for change order.
I don't care.
Concerns. The low bidder was Arbor Corporation Construction Company. This one, there were no protests for this particular bid. This again, when we looked at our low and our high cost estimates for the tennis court projects, this actually came in right where we had hoped it would, and so we're excited to begin this process and this project over the course of the summer. We will have several more bids coming to the board for approval at our next board meeting as well. And our recommendation is for the board to approve bid number 265.
If there's no additional discussion, I would move approval of bid number 265.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Okay, seeing no one, I have a motion by Mrs. Schaffer, a second by, was it Mr. Buckman? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Moving on to the action consent agenda, please let me know if you would like any of these items pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, disposition of surplus property. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.05, approval of purchase orders. And 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll.
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.06.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. Reports by board members. Advance agenda. Is there anyone that would like to put something forward for the advance agenda? Okay. Seeing no one, then we'll go to reports by board members.
Is there something else? It's 4.01. This new revised administrative regulations.
That's just there to give us the ARs if there are new ones that we're unaware of, I think. So reports by board members. Mrs. Schaffer.
All right. Thank you. I attended a couple of things with fellow board members in the past couple of weeks, but one I attended on my own that was really informational and just a wonderful thing to attend was the DLAC meeting at Laguna Middle School last week. And the enthusiasm demonstrated by the parents who are involved in that group, I know that we've worked as a district and staff have worked very diligently over the past several years to help this particular group of families and parents and students become more a part of our district in whatever way we can, and one way has been through DLAC and their participation. They had recently returned several of them. I think six or seven parents attended the CBAC, the California State Conference, and they had so much great information and were so enthusiastic, and they had attended classes on topics from everything from the school sites and working how to be effective in the school sites, how to help their children learn, to parenting. And they had brought back information, they made copies, there were things going around the table, people saying, I want to take a copy of that home, what do I need to do? And just a huge amount of enthusiasm and participation from that group that was wonderful to see. People were talking about A through G, how to get their students into these classes, what it means, what they need, how to best help them, how they can understand as parents so that they know the system. There was a calendar that had been handed out that said when SATs were given, when the prep days were, things that, you know, parents, some of them didn't know from SAT. They were, you know, so there was this exchange of information and knowledge going on that was really wonderful. And there were lots of questions. They were very happy to hear that summer school will be in place this year. There were a lot of questions about where will it be, what kinds of classes will there be, what will transportation look like. So it was just a great meeting to attend. So that was kind of the highlight of my last couple weeks.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman, then Mr. Questenberry.
Thanks. I agree with Ellen. There's been a lot of events. I'm counting about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5. The Bishop's Peak drive-through, the Hawthorne Open House, Hawthorne Boardwalk, C.L. Smith Dinner. Thank you, Dr. Prater. But one of the ones that was a standout for me was the California Retired Teachers Association annually gives out scholarships, and a number of our students received them. Also, it was really heartening to see the number of principals, the number of staff, counselors, and teachers, the parents that were there, obviously the students, and the administration. I think it was Rick and Kristen. So it was a great showing from San Luis Coastal. If I can take a moment, I'd like to read the names of the students, if anybody minds. Okay, thanks. So from Pacific Beach, it was Rachel Erickson. From San Luis Obispo, it was Jense Caldera. Again, from San Luis Obispo, it was Sky Michelle and Sarah Mosin Chuck. And from Morro Bay, it was Gernardo Bori, Cameron Curtis, and again, congratulations to them, and so much thanks for so much of the staff for being there. And I'd also just like to mention, I also got to attend the Parent Teacher Association and Boosters meeting with Dr. Prater and Kim at Del Mar, and as always, going to Del Mar, it's a wonderful experience to see the different programs that they're doing, and they were using thinking maps, which was very good, and I'm actually trying to find a set of those to sort of help me think. Thanks.
Mr. Questenberry.
Thank you. Well, I had a chance, a little more than a week ago to help make a stepping stone for the Monarch Grove Butterfly Garden. Dr. Prater showed up and took a photo of me working with a delightful young lady, classmate of my 4-year-old grandson at the parent project. I always have to make care of making. So
It was a lot of fun, and I got a tour of their garden facilities there, and of the new milkweed plants that they are incubating and growing and so forth. So anyway, it was a great time, and I hope to return soon to perhaps do a lesson on haiku.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Thank you. I was able to attend the production at Slow High of Guys and Dolls last weekend. I think I've mentioned a couple of times that previously it's been impossible to attend because it's so crowded in that little black box theater they have. But now there must have been more than 75 people, and because it was an outdoor venue. So the pro was that more people got to come. The con was that the kids were having to climb over outdoor furniture in order to perform in their acts. But it was a great production. It was very professional. Kate Stevens deserves many kudos. She's done a fantastic job with that program. And the kids were incredibly resilient and, of course, very gung-ho about the production. I just really look forward to when we have a suitable theater for them to perform those productions in, because it will be boffo. And my other thing I'd like to report is that my son and I ran in the Color Run at Slow High, which had been postponed from January. It is, of course, the memorial run for Alex Meyer, who passed away 4 years ago in a car accident here, and whose family, his sister, started this as a fundraiser. And last year, they raised $30,000 for scholarships for students. And this year, they've grossed $50,000, according to Mr. O'Connor. So I wanted to share that with you. And it's just such a wonderful community, happy, upbeat event. In fact, it's the whole theme. And apparently, his slogan was Think Happy. And so that's what the day is dedicated to. It was a pleasure to participate.
Okay, and then I'll just be very brief. Oh, Mr. Unger.
Sure. On the 20th, I got to go to the Morro Bay High School Academic Awards, and it was great. The hundreds of students received academic awards at Morro Bay High School, and it was just really nice to see the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders all be recognized for their hard work. I did something, two interesting things, actually. On the 22nd, I was at something called the CCS Partnership Meeting, which is cities, counties, and schools. Up in Sacramento, and there was a large emphasis on civics education and the importance of civics education and the importance of kids being involved and learning about government. But one of the more interesting things, and I shared this with Dr. Prater, was lunches for kids that are in need, especially during the summer's breakfast and lunches. And there are several school districts or several school districts that have actually partnered with their local public libraries and are serving lunches at their local public libraries during the summer so the kids can eat, which I thought was great. And then on the 25th, I attended a meeting down in Riverside that was featured James Olmos, the actor. And he talked about a program that he does, especially in schools of poverty, where he... it's actually a film school for kids in poverty, and it's great. He's got a lot of private donations from it, and it's one of those exciting things that when we think about STEAM that we see people are doing it throughout the state and just in different ways. You know, I would never have thought about kids making movies and things like that. It was very exciting and really fun. So it's been kind of a busy week.
Thank you. Is your light on for a reason, Mr. Questmere?
I was just going to encourage you to make your report.
Mine's very brief. Mr. Questmere and I attended a poetry, I guess you would call it a reading, in Mrs. Kirby's fourth grade class at Monarch Grove, where Kevin Sullivan, our resident poet, recited some of his poetry, read from his books, and the students shared their poetry, which was wonderful. It was a really nice experience, and Mrs. Kirby made brownies. So, if there's nothing additional, we are adjourned.